Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga, Simon Clancy is here, so is Chris Kaufman. And as always, we are brought to you by Better Edge. Go to betteredge.com/5 reasons. You get $25 just for signing up. And as always, Prize Picks. Go to Prize Picks. Use promo code 5. They have a one-time rollover on $100, maximum $100. You deposit $100, you bet it through once, only once. It's not one of these stupid rollovers where you have to roll it over 1,000 times. Just once. And they give you the $100. So in other words, it's a free $100 bet. So take it. Promo code FIVE. All right. The first half of this show, we're going to put to bed some of the guys that were let go today. And in the second half of the show, we'll put to bed the regular and the postseason of the Miami Dolphins 2022 season. But today, Steve Gregory, Ty McKenzie, Steve Ferentz were relieved of their duties, along with the defensive coordinator, Josh Borsch.
That's pretty close. It's another Belichick guy.
Yeah, because we were talking about something else that Josh McDaniels was involved in with Jim Irsay. We won't talk about that on this show. I will say this. You know, I've been in and around that building for 3 years. All of these guys were really, really, really accommodating, very good people. I never, ever saw Steve Ferentz. And I don't know why that is. But
do we know that he actually exists, or was he just a photo on the website?
Well, he was never made available. I see his photo, but I don't remember him. I really don't. I guess they just didn't make him available ever. But he was also relieved of his duties. I'll start with you, Simon. I don't think we're surprised. Defense kind of underperformed this year. But your thoughts on these moves?
Look, there's a human element to this. You know, there's lots of people rejoicing about the fact that a man lost his job. And I think once you strip away the, you know, the fact that it is only a game and, you know, this affects people well beyond sport. I think it's always a little bit, it's always a bit disconcerting to cheerlead when somebody loses their job. But, you know, like you say, I don't think it's a surprise necessarily. I certainly don't think Boyer was nearly as bad as he was made out. I think that there were critical moments in critical games that he got wrong. And I think that was the catalyst, really. You know, you go back to the game against the Chargers and dropping everybody off into the end zone. You go back, you know, big third downs all season long absolutely killed us. There were critical moments in that game on Sunday against Buffalo that certainly in the first half he got badly wrong. And I think ultimately that was the issue. I don't think he's a bad coach. I don't think he's a bad defensive coordinator. I think he got hamstrung a little bit by injuries, certainly on the back end. You know, it must be hard to try and run your defense when, you know, you're losing what, 4 of your top 6 defensive backs are out for the season or out for a significant portion of the year. That must be extremely hard, especially when, you know, 3 of them are starters in Needham, Jones, and Jones.
And don't forget Trill Williams was supposed to be Carter Coho before he became Carter Coho, you know.
So, you know, I think it's, like I said, I don't think it's a surprise, Chris, to you. I just think you know, I do think it's sad when somebody loses their job. I do think, and I know we're going to get onto this, but and you and I, Alf, were talking about this just before we started recording, but I do feel like somebody's lined up or somebody's, you know, I don't think they've gone into this blind, certainly, but, you know, I think they'll have a very short list of names of candidates. There has to be one minority candidate interviewed for every coordinator position in the NFL. So it'll be interesting to see who shakes out in the next few hours, few days, really. So, yeah, Chris, I'm not shocked. Are you shocked?
I'm not. I mean, we can't be shocked. We've talked about it in the past. But I think the thing that people have to keep in mind is you don't get fired because of what you did in the past. You get fired because of the future, you know, especially in a position like this, like defensive coordinator. You're not firing necessarily Josh Boyer because of this call or that call or something like that. You're firing him because you don't think he's the guy going forward, you know. And that's I know that that's sort of nuanced, but it's important because the reason he's being fired, and we can talk about, you know, oh, this third down was terrible or he blitzed too much or something like that. The reason I think he's being fired ultimately is because of the changing makeup of the personnel on defense, and the bone structure of the defense is changing that way. And is this the guy that you roll with as the defense is changing? I mean, it's one thing if you had a defense that is built around the shutdown abilities of Xavier Howard and Byron Jones, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's one personnel structure, and you might have a defense in mind that works for that, you know, and maybe that blitz heavy, the zero look, you know, that sort of thing works for that structure, but we don't have Byron Jones anymore. He's not going to be back. I don't think we're, you know, saying anything controversial by saying that. Xavier Howard clearly was not Xavier Howard this year. They put him in some bad positions, and he was also injured, but, you know, he's also kind of a little older now. He still believes he can play, but he also said at the end of the year, he's like, I just need to be put in better positions. And I think that kind of foreshadowed this release. And so instead, what you have is a defense that's being built around Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, Christian Wilkins, and Zach Sealer. It's around, the defense is being built around that strong defensive front. And I think that calls for a different defense, and maybe Josh Boyer is not the authority on transitioning to a different defense in this way. You know, maybe if you were just going to run it back and like try and retool the same approach and say, you know, hey, we're going to get Xavier Howard back next year. He's going to be healthy, we swear. And we're going to find a shutdown corner to replace Byron Jones. And, you know, all this stuff, we're just going to retool and find the players that staff the same exact defensive growth. Then I think Josh Boyer would be back. And it had to be an actual thought in that building. Like, hey, we're going to, you know, we can do this. We can restaff, you know, we can retool. I think that this is sort of an acknowledgement that's not really possible. And the defense needs to change, and Josh Boyer is probably just not the guy to sponsor that. And I don't think there's any hard feelings. I think there's a lot of respect for Boyer in that building, and there should be. I think he is ultimately a good coach. I mean, yeah, he did make some mistakes, but I think, you know, ultimately that's the reason he's not here anymore.
Yeah, and Dolphin fans are very, very aware of a defensive coordinator having serious blunders. I had my issues with Matt Burke, and I won't rehash them, but you could go back in history. Tom Olivadotti, you know, how many times did Tom Olivadotti come up short in the playoffs against mostly the Buffalo Bills? Josh Boyer was not that. He wasn't a guy prone to blunders. The only blunder I can remember really was that play on the, you know, having everybody on the goal line and then allowing then to throw the ball to the best pass catching back in football and have him get the ball all the way down to the 2 yard line, which gave him an idea to go for it on fourth down. They got a touchdown on there. And if you look at the final score at the end of the game, that went a long way to losing that one. So Josh Boer is a very competent coach. He has a great resume. He'll land on his feet. He'll be okay. And he's the one who also said, he said to him, you know, he told Barry Jackson when Barry Jackson asked him a very foreboding question about, you know, possibly getting fired. And he said, oh, I'll be fine. I'll be okay. And he will be okay. He'll land on his feet somewhere, maybe New England. Maybe we see him in the division two times a year. Well, that begs the question. I said on this show, I didn't want our team to be one of those dipshit teams that just looks at the rankings at the end of the year and says, well, you know, defense was 18th and 24th in scoring, so fire everybody and not have a plan. The best teams have a plan. They have enough talent. I think this is a very attractive roster to sell to a defensive coordinator, and the head coach has already said and said many, many a times that he wants head coaches of units, that he tends to be very hands-off. That's a good thing. He will not micromanage. So he'll hand over part of the roster to be managed by a defensive coordinator. So I think it'll be a really attractive job. Simon, you have a short list?
I mean, I've got some names that I think that I find interesting. You know, I there are coaches who are still in employ elsewhere that I'd be intrigued about. Brandon Staley, obviously. Feels like he's going to stay at the Chargers, but you don't know. Raheem Morris, obviously, if he leaves the Rams. Ejaya Rivero of the Broncos, who I think has done a phenomenal job, obviously knows Bradley Chubb very well. Shane Bowen, if he leaves Tennessee. And then, you know, some guys who are position coaches, not coordinators, but hugely highly regarded. Chris Harris in Washington, Drew Wilkins of the Giants. Chris Kachurek, who obviously has been at the Dolphins before, is defensive line coach of the 49ers. Nick Rallis of the Eagles, who's the linebackers coach under Jonathan Gannon. And then there's the guy at Seattle, whose name completely escapes me for some bizarre reason.
Sean Desai?
Yeah, Sean Desai. So, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, you could go through a kind of a cast of former head coaches who are now, you know, coaching elsewhere, and then whether that's Steve Wilkes if he doesn't get the Carolina job. I mean, I don't foresee Dan Quinn going to another team to be a defensive coordinator, but you know, there's guy. What's Lovie Smith going to do? Is he going to retire? Is he going to, you know, does he want another head coaching job?
Ed Donatell just got fired, by the way.
Yeah, so. I mean, you know, I think. Look, for me, I think Vic Fangio is the name that obviously pops off the page for everybody. You know, McDaniel wanted him previously, didn't get him, obviously. But Vic Fangio loves, you know, defensive linemen. He loves edge rushers. He loves, you know, the front seven especially. And
he likes going to Denver Nugget games with Bradley Chubb.
He does like going to Denver Nuggets games with Bradley Chubb. But, you know, hey, Vic, you know, come and reunite with Bradley Chubb. And also we've got this young stud, Jalen Phillips, and we got this kid, Emmanuel Ogba, coming back off IR, and here's this long-haired freak called Andrew Van Ginkle, and do you know Christian Wilkins, and have a look at Zach Sealer, and here's Raekwon Davis and John Jenkins, and, you know, there's some talent on the back end as well, and meet this kid called Javon Holland, and, you know, Xavier Howard can still play, and, you know, that's enticing for anybody, I think. So I think, you know, top of my list probably would be Fangio. I think Averro would be a very interesting name. And if he was let go by the Chargers, I think Brandon Staley would be a guy I'd be very interested in as well. So there's some interesting names out there. I mean, Chris, you got any others? I mean, that to me would be kind of my list, I think. Oh, and Austin Clark as well, who's the Dolphins' current defensive line coach. He's done a tremendous job, obviously.
The beloved Austin Clark. We would have had a problem here if he was somehow let go, because he's a favorite of all of those guys you mentioned, which happened to be the core of that defense.
Well, you know, and Austin Clark didn't he? I mean, he was with the Illini, right? And so, was he at some point, was he under Lovie Smith there with the Illini? Because, you know, I bring that up because the buzzword I keep hearing is about experience, and so. You know, yeah, you could make the case for guys that have sort of personal and professional connections with Mike McDaniel. You know, guys that have tooling under Robert Saleh right now, like, you know, Mike Rutenberg or Aaron Whitecotton, Tony Oden.
Yeah, he was there 2 years with Lovie. Yeah.
Yeah, Austin Clark. So yeah, but anyway, but getting back to, you know, you could get guys that are under Saleh and have been coached with McDaniel, and that he's named by name as guys that are like friends of his. Joe Woods just got fired from Cleveland, and you know, obviously they coached together in San Francisco. Corey Undland, James Betcher is an interesting name that people have brought up. You know, has a good reputation. It could be something like that, but the buzzword I keep hearing is about experience, and that's where a Vic Fangio comes in. You know, because whoever, as you say, Alf, whoever comes in is going to be the head coach of the defense. And we just went through a season where I think it's fair to say that Mike McDaniel showed the fact that he's a little wet behind the ears. Mm-hmm. As a head coach,
and we'll talk about that in the second half of the show too.
Yeah, and so you know, because of that, I think that there's some thought, you know, from people in the building that if you hire a Vic Fangio, you know, or a guy that has not just defensive coordinator experience, but also maybe head coach experience, then you're helping out. You're going a long way toward helping out Mike McDaniel as a head coach. And the reason I brought up the Austin Clark thing under Lovie Smith is obviously he's out, you know, and I think that he would probably not accept anything below a head coach position anymore, but you know, it's possible. The other thing to consider though is that, you know, there could be a power broker situation going on with Richmond Flowers, who's, you know, he's the agent of a lot of coaches in the NFL. And he is Mike McDaniel's agent. He is also Vic Fangio's agent. He is also Edgero Evero's agent, you know. And that's a guy that Simon just brought up that could find himself, you know, leaving Denver and looking for a job. And the other guy that I know, like, it, that I'm sure Mac McDaniel would love to hire is Jeff Ulbrich from the Jets. The question is, you know, lateral move, that's tricky. I'm not sure that, you know, that really would work. But certainly also Raheem Morris is a good shout. But, you know, leader in the clubhouse, Vic Fangio. And I think that's probably the one that I would just bring up real quick, you know, kind of a wild card to think about. And, you know, we've talked about him a little bit, is keep in mind that Leslie Frazier up in Buffalo is finishing out the third year of what is likely a 3-year contract. Mm-hmm. He did an original 3-year stint in Buffalo, and they gave him one of those, you know, make you happy, promote you, three-year contract extensions, gave him the assistant head coach title. He's probably now on the third out of the 3 years of that. And so he's upcoming free agent. I think, Alf, you've mentioned that there's usually, or most often there's a fourth year option there, or team option.
It's a sweetener just for that title, you know, to make you different.
A team option is never a sweetener for the for the player or for the coach. It's a sweetener for the team. You know, it's a way of the team controlling your fate for another, controlling your rights for a fourth year, should they, without paying for it. You know, should they decide to option it. So it actually wouldn't surprise me if, you know, he's coming off the first 3-year stint. He's a great coordinator, leading a great defense for Buffalo. They're trying to give him a make you happy contract, and they give him the assistant head coach title. And he says to them, you know, oh, by the way, this fourth year team option shit, you know, no, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if that's in play there, but there's a lot of ifs, obviously. But
I think I think the biggest if is their game on Sunday. We were a year ago where the entire Buffalo media was prepared to throw Leslie Frazier under the bus and blame him for the 13 seconds, the infamous 13 seconds. What happens Sunday? They're playing Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase. They get smoked. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's happening Monday, you know?
Well, you don't, but I mean, to be fair, they had the number one scoring defense in the NFL last year, and they had the number two scoring defense in the NFL this year. So, I mean, you know, he's coming off great years, but that might actually be why he could be interested in a new, I'm not saying the Dolphins even, but like a new place to coach, because he's been there 6 years. And if this is a guy that wants to be a head coach, and all indications are that he does, if he wants to be a head coach again, you know, what's the definition of insanity? He's been there 6 years. He can't even get an interview in this cycle. You know, he's leading the number two scoring defense in the NFL. He led the number one scoring defense in the NFL last year, and he can't even get an interview this cycle. So there's something to be said for the idea of going, you know, going to be the head coach of defense under a, you know, wet behind the ears offensive guy who won't even touch the defense, you know, and maybe that's his last Hail Mary to try and get a head coach job. You know, it's just something to consider. I know the Dolphins would probably love to weaken a division opponent by taking somebody from the Jets or taking somebody from the Bills. So, you know, somebody to keep in mind that's on the third year of his 3 year contract.
Now, it's all, you know, we've been talking about experience, and that seems to be probably the way that they're going to go. But if you're going to go for the hot shot young gun, is there a better name than Sean Desai? Because if you look at his resume, and you brought this about on OnlyFans, yeah, not only has he worked under Pagano and under Lovie Smith, he was at the University of Miami for a year. And, you know, he's been credited, you know, it's sometimes when players give guys credit, but Eddie Jackson has credited him with his career. Is there even a possibility, Simon, that they try to pair the hot shot young gun on offense with a hot shot young gun on defense this time around?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, what I like about Desai, I mean, there's lots of things, but you know, collegiate experience. He's been a special teams coach. He's been a defensive coach, but he's also coached running backs, you know, and he's done football operations. So he's really been on all sides of the coin. So that's, you know, to me, that's the really interesting thing. Obviously, he's younger. He's 39. So you really are coming in, and it flies in the face of what you guys have just been talking about in terms of that experience thing. But, you know, he lost out in the defensive coordinator battle in Cleveland to Jim Schwartz. He interviewed with him, I think, Monday of this week. But, you know, he's really highly regarded. And I just do wonder about whether or not having two extremely young coordinators on both sides of the ball, because obviously McDaniel calling plays on offense, given some of the, you know, fuck-ups that we saw certainly at points on offense this season, whether or not you could risk that happening again, or whether there just needs to be some sort of veteran sort of consigliere who can just be a sort of an overseer and could just, you know, have a word in McDaniel's ear at times, like a Fangio or a Lovie Smith or a Leslie Frazier, somebody of that ilk who just brings a few more years to the table that Coach McDaniel doesn't have.
Mm.
No. Yeah, I think keep in mind about Desai, he was defensive coordinator of the Bears, right, last year. They weren't necessarily a bad defense. They got worse when he left. He left because they hired a defensive coach, and, you know, obviously that guy had ideas about who was going to take over as defensive coordinator. But, you know, he's not only coached under, like, Lovie Smith and Chuck Pagano. He's coached under Vic Fangio. He's known to be a Vic Fangio guy. He currently coaches under Pete Carroll. He was the youngest coordinator in NFL history, in Super Bowl, you know, history, Super Bowl era history in the NFL last year when he took over the Bears defense. He's known as the professor. He literally was a college professor. I believe he has a PhD, you know, which seems like it kind of jives with Mike McDaniel's general approach to the game. And I think that you know, getting hired straight away to Pete Carroll's defense when Pete Carroll never even coached with the dude, says something about him. Getting kept on by all the coaches that have gone in and out of Chicago, generally speaking, that says something for him. I think that, you know, he's a hot name, and you're right to bring it up. But at the same time, you know, Simon was what Simon just said about the experience, about having a weathered guy, you know, to help Mike McDaniel out. That's probably the theme that's running hottest in that building right now. And so we'll see.
All right, one last name, and then I guess we could briefly talk about the connections to Mike McDaniel. But one last name, as far as I wouldn't say, you know, hot shot young gun, because his resume is lengthy, but he did cross paths with Mike McDaniel in San Francisco for a year. Tony Oden he's been here before. He's with the Jets right now. It would be a promotion. Your thoughts, Chris, and then I'd like to get Simon in on this one, because this, like, if you want to talk about resumes, although he's never been a defensive coordinator before, but if you want to talk resumes and, you know, try to pair two young guys together, although Tony Oden, like I said, he's been around forever. He's my age, actually. I like his resume. Him, Sean Desai, like, if that's the way they're going to go, like, Tony Oden should have his name at the top of the list. Do you agree, Chris?
Yeah, I think that he would be a strong interview for them. It would be a reunion of sorts with the Dolphins. He was here in 2018 and 2019. He did coach for San Francisco for a year, so obviously I think Mike McDaniel knows him. He's coaching under Robert Saleh in New York right now, so clearly an impression was made in San Francisco. I think it speaks well of him. As you say, he's got a good resume. He's been around a lot of teams, and he's been a defensive backs coach for a long time. It does sound like a very Sean Desai kind of hot young name. I say young, but he's 49 years old. And I think that it would make sense as an interview. But again, he's in the same boat as Desai when it comes to, you know, do we want the experience? Do we want the, you know, sort of the more grizzled, experienced voice in the room that Mike McDaniel can lean on a little bit? We'll see.
Simon, any thoughts on
Oden? Yeah, I mean, look, he's a terrific coach. You have to look and see what he's done with those young corners in New York this year with Sauce Gardner, et cetera, you know, to know. There's a couple of names that I've kind of just been pondering while you guys have been talking. One of them is Johnny Holland, who's the linebackers coach at the 49ers. You know, and I mean, that group with Al Shaair, Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner is as good as it gets in the league. The other guy that we haven't touched is Jim Leonard.
Hmm.
Just, you know, outside the box kind of thinking, probably won't happen, but, you know, a guy that we understand is keen to come to the NFL, obviously, you know, cut his teeth at Wisconsin, highly regarded, interviewed for the Packers defensive coordinator job, turned it down, or withdrew from the selection process. But, you know, maybe a name to keep an eye on.
Yeah, although it's odd that Wisconsin is not, has no interest, right, to retain him as the head coach. Did they hire a guy already?
They hired Matt.
Who the hell did Wisconsin hire?
They hired Luke Fickell.
Did they?
Did they go for Fickell?
Where did Matt Rhule end up? Nebraska.
Yeah, Matt Rhule went to Nebraska inexplicably.
Yeah, Fickell's the Wisconsin head coach, I'm sure he is.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, it's odd that Jim Leonard, although I, you know, yep, I'm not an expert on the job Jim Leonard did in Wisconsin. You know, I know, yep, they were not good. They were not good this year.
I will say though about Holland, the thing to, you know, I don't know if it's a concern or not. I mean, first off, that is an experienced coach, right? Mm. Like he's been I think he's been a coach for 35 years. I mean, yeah, he's very experienced. But for some reason, he's been stuck at the linebackers coach level for that long, essentially. Yeah. And I think I wonder about that. I do know that, you know, I've seen guys write about how extremely well respected he was in that San Francisco organization. So in that vein, you wouldn't be surprised if Mike McDaniel is like, hey, why doesn't this guy get a shot? You know, and really kind of try to push. So
I mean, the flip side to that maybe is that, you know, he just doesn't want to be anything else other than a linebacker coach. We don't know that information, but, you know, you just get guys, don't you, that just like doing what they do, and they don't want to necessarily go up the ladder, and they're just kind of comfortable not being the guy.
But well, you know, Chris Kocurek, the guy that you mentioned before, always struck me as that.
Yeah.
Like he wanted to be defensive line. He loves defensive line. You know, I remember talking to him before the Super Bowl in Miami. And you know, he does seem very satisfied about being a defensive line coach. So I wonder if he does, like, I would not be surprised if he wants to be a defensive coordinator. Many, you know, coaches do, but you know, it's a question.
All right. And we're going to go to break now. It's obvious, like, if I had to put a name out there, the leader in our clubhouse, if we had a blank check, is Vic Fangio, right, Simon?
Yeah. I mean, you just see what he's, you know, his resume. I think it would, plus what he brings in terms of that experience factor that we've just been discussing. You know, it's hard to look elsewhere when it comes to it.
And the talent fits too. You agree, Rick, right?
Yeah, the talent fits the defensive front. That's kind of his thing. But also, you know, you just mentioned that Ed Donatell just got canned in Minnesota. Well, that mm-hmm. that's his longtime secondary coach, Vic Fangio. So, you know, not only could you have a situation where Vic Fangio comes, but he's already got his longtime secondary coach lined up to bring with him. It's possible anyway. So yeah, it does feel like the elephant in the room, I guess, you know, or the 500-pound gorilla or whatever.
Well, we're gonna go to break, and when we come back, we will put to bed the 2022 Miami Dolphins season. But first, these words. Do you have a water leak and can't find where it's coming from? Are you dealing with water or mold damage in your home or business? Then call Water Cleanup of Florida at 954-579-0356 for immediate assistance. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, and their team is prepared to handle all types of leak detection issues, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. After the leak has been located and repaired, Water Cleanup of Florida will then clean, dry, and fully restore the damaged areas. Water Cleanup of Florida is fully licensed, insured, and certified to provide the one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. There is no need to bring in other contractors. They will handle the entire project from start to finish. Service areas include Miami, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356, or visit their website at WCUFL.com. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
And we're back. All right, I hate to be this guy, but Simon, I would say, and if you want to disagree with me, it's fine. If you want to call me an idiot, that's good too. This was a disappointing season, I think. I think they underachieved by at least a game, if not more. And I understand the injuries, but there was, in my opinion, there was more lows than there should have been. And that 5-game losing streak was, I think, put a huge damper on the season. Now, if I had to say, give a positive, 85-81. That was a score between the Miami Dolphins and their arch rival, the Buffalo Bills, and that's the competition going forward. You want to win the division? You want to get yourself in a better position in the playoffs? You win the division, you get a home game in the playoffs. That's the competition. 85-81, that was impressive. Other than that, slight disappointment in the regular season. Am I wrong? Do you agree, disagree?
I generally agree. I mean, I think maybe that's slightly colored by the fact that we were 8-3 and were playing for the number one seed against San Francisco and went up on the first play of the game. And the excitement at that point was like massive. Mm-hmm. And then to sort of fall away, I thought, was disappointing. There's obviously a wider question that we'll get into with the quarterback and injuries. We were hamstrung. You know, people like us don't make excuses. It's not, I mean, they are facts. These are facts of the matters. You know, you remove, you know, the four of the six best defensive backs on any team in the league, that they will struggle. That is not an excuse. That's just a fact. But I think the point that we were 8-3 and looking fantastic and people were talking about us as a potential Super Bowl team, and then to really, you know, reverse back into the playoffs, you know, by the back of back doors was kind of, you know, a bit disappointing. That 5-game losing streak was pretty average, really, apart from that Buffalo game. You know, I thought, you know, those two road games on the West Coast were really disappointing. In terms of how they played out stylistically, but also the score. You know, just when you thought, okay, we've kind of beaten up on some, you know, some not bottom feeders, but, you know, I mean, Detroit were 1-6 at the time, and, you know, the Steelers weren't great at the time, and Cleveland aren't a great team, and Houston obviously ended up with a second overall pick, and, you know, whoever else we beat in the Chicago, they ended up with the first overall pick. So, you know, there were some bottom feeders in there. And, you know, you just thought we'd get the confidence from winning 5 games in a row. The quarterback's firing. And then to sort of lay a bit of an egg on the West Coast was disappointing. You come back and you play really well, albeit in a losing manner against Buffalo. But, you know, there was lots to be cheerful about. There was lots to look forward to next season, but there's certainly lots of questions. And I think ultimately, you know, from being 8-3, from being in that position and then getting the kick in the teeth to end up at 9-8, back into the playoffs, lose, playing with your third string quarterback. Oh, and then the other shit sandwich, which is the fact that the owner gets your first round pick taken off you as well. Kind of just, there's lots to be excited about. McDaniel, the quarterback, the receivers, the defensive line, that, you know, there's some sexy players. It's exciting to be, you know. But yeah, 9-8 plus losing your first round pick is a bit of a shit. Is a bit shit, really. So yeah, I mean, a bit disappointing. I think a bit disappointing, a bit underwhelming, and a little bit. You know, I think you nailed the word. Really, you said it was I can't remember what word you said it was now, but it was a really good word. Trust me, that word was very important and very good.
And if we remembered that word, y'all would be make really
this
impressed.
Much better. It would make this a much better show.
I don't even remember that word. I don't remember
that word was very good.
Promise.
Yeah. Trust me, it was a great word.
I didn't say uneven. I didn't say what the hell did I say? It was disappointing, underwhelming.
It was something like it began with you, I'm sure. But anyway, it's not. It was not that important.
Yeah. Chris, are you with me? Yeah. Even with look, a lot of people don't give a crap about game score. I do. Okay. I do. Game score says 10 wins. Like there was 10 wins yeah. with this roster, with those injuries, with, you know, with health, we're talking about 11, 12, and maybe even 12 comes into view. But man, some disappointing moments against Minnesota. You know, you can't figure it out with your backup quarterbacks to win a game until the last game of the season. That Jet game, and I understand they were within a field goal in the fourth quarter, but all hell breaks loose on them in the last 5 minutes, and you lose by 23 points. You lay an egg for the most part. Somehow you're down 3 points to start the fourth quarter against the Chargers. But that was an egg, a monumental egg for most of that game, from the offense, from the defense, from all involved. Kind of disappointing, no? You agree?
How could you not be disappointed, right, with the same record that we were a year ago when we're hoping to improve, you know? But at the same time, it's really just – it's in the eye of the beholder because I think as the season went on, some of the things that we discovered are that we probably shouldn't have had the expectations that we did. I think that it was unfair – in some ways to expect the first year head coach who is as young as Mike McDaniel, who hadn't even been a play caller before, or at least not the official play caller. It's a little bit unfair to expect him to not have significant bumps along the way. It's unfair. Maybe even going back to Josh Boyer and his firing, this was the first year that he was a defensive coordinator and didn't have, you know, a very mean mugging Brian Flores standing over his shoulder, ready to take over the entire, you know, defensive think process at any given moment during the week or during the game. And maybe it was unfair of us to think that a defense that was built around the shutdown capabilities of Xavier Howard and Byron Jones is going to be a good defense when Xavier Howard is so hampered by injuries that he's having statistically one of the worst seasons of any corner in the NFL this year. And Byron Jones never played a down, you know, and all these things, it might have been a little unfair for us to and then you have the Tua situation. You're gonna miss how many games did it end up being? That
4.5.
Tua missed four and a half games without your starting. Well,
with the playoffs, 5.5.
Five and a half because of the playoffs. You're gonna miss your quarterback for 5.5 games. The entire thought process behind your defense is gonna be thrown in the garbage. You have first year, you know, green wet behind the ears head coach who hadn't even been a play caller before, and now he's going to be a head coach and play caller. You're going to have all these things, and you're still expecting, you know, Super Bowl. You know, maybe we had bad expectations, and maybe we even overperformed them, because frankly, my goal all year, I didn't even have that much of a goal in mind for the regular season. My goal all year was I want that first playoff win that we've gotten since Bill Clinton was president. I want the playoff win. It's been way too long. It's embarrassing. And I want that playoff win. And frankly, how close were we to getting exactly that?
Yes.
This, you know, and so, you know, on the one hand, you know, yeah, you can't help but be disappointed, but on the relative to our expectations, on the other hand, you're like, guys, you probably shouldn't have expected that in the first place. And yet we still almost came away with exactly, you know, so close to coming away with exactly what, you know, the end goal was for me in this season, which was that first playoff win in so long. And we were competitive in that game. And it's, well, you know, I don't like the moral victory game at all, but that was the first close playoff game that we've played since Bill Clinton was president. So, you know,
was it? Well, it was 1995, the last time they played a competitive playoff game. And
No. It was 2000. It was after the 2000 season. We won against the Indianapolis Colts in the wild card round. That was the game that JP.
No, but the last time that they lost in a close game in the playoffs, I believe was 1995. No.
The last time they lost in a close game in the playoffs. Yeah, you're right. It goes back longer, but we did win in the playoffs, so I mean, yes, that counts. But I mean, this would have been the first playoff win since 2000, since January, early January of 2000, and I think that or 2001, and I think that. I think that that's saying something about our expectations, and maybe we should have sharpened up our game a little bit in addition to, you know, in addition to the improvements that obviously need to be made on the coaching staff and with the team this offseason and with the personnel. But yeah, I think it's all in the eye of the beholder. It's how you look at it.
Yeah. And we're going to move on now to the coaches, and we're going to go down the team, you know, piece by piece. The coach, his first year, you know, you can't argue with, you know, his performance against the Buffalo Bills. The previous regime, last year was 61-11 was the final score. That's not competitive. 35-0 and then 26-11. No, not fun. Not fun watching those games. This year, man, it felt different. And I don't know if the Bills are weaker than they were last year. They probably are. And we improved. We obviously did. But those three games reminded me of why I like this sport and why I like this team and why this can be so much fun going forward. That was those three games. Like, I'll put them up against anything. Anything that this team has done as far as winning, success, anything in the last 10 years. That is my source for optimism for next year. And that was, you got to give it to Mike McDaniel, because his offense was mostly the catalyst in all three of those games. Although the defense did make plays in game one and game three to keep them in it. Mike McDaniel obsesses over getting that first playoff win. That's another good thing about him. And his communication is great. Very accommodating. Smart. Comes in with the reputation as a guru and actually delivers on that. Now, you know, he did add Teron Armstead and Tyreek Hill to the offense, and his quarterback was playing pretty well. So with his starting quarterback, top five offense, and if you believe in some of the advanced metrics, top three, and in some metrics, top two, that's pretty good. Man, I think and I understand the clock management issues. Yeah, you know, absolutely. I would say I'm much more optimistic on that end. And I understand that it's contradictory to say, yeah, you know what? I'm kind of disappointed in their season this year, but I really like the coach. But I do. Okay. So if you want to say that it's kind of weird to be that contradictory, I guess I will be weird in that regard. I love this first year of Mike McDaniel, and that's what I'm most optimistic about. Your thoughts, Simon, the head coach?
I like the head coach. I like what he did. But the bottom line is the record is the record. We finished 9-8, okay, which is the same record as the guy before. And in big moments, we went on the road at the back end of the season in big games, and we lost and laid an egg in San Francisco. We lost and laid an egg in L.A., we lost in Buffalo twice. We lost in New England. You know, we're 0-5 in big games, the back end of the year on the road against big playoff contenders. And, you know, that has to change. You know, you can't beat up on cupcakes and get into the playoffs. At some point, you have to beat the big teams. So, hugely optimistic. He seems a great guy. you know, great with the media, funny, dark sense of humor, but that only gets you so far, you know. So I think that what I know about Mike McDaniel, he will go away and work hard on the things that he failed at, whilst continuing to work on the things that he was really good at. I felt like a little bit like the offense became a little bit, you know, it was great to see that little reverse to Jalen Waddle and those sorts of things. We sort of, you know, the innovation and that kind of whole sort of Jeff Darlington saying, oh, you know, the game plan is going to be absolutely balls out. And it really wasn't. It wasn't anything different, really. You know, I thought we became a bit predictable at times. You know, Tyreek off the hit off the field, we're probably going to run. You know, if you lined up Craycraft and Sherfield to the same side, you're pretty sure you're going to run that way. You know, I think he has to get out of those tendencies. Passing on third and short, all of those sorts of things, trying to outthink himself sometimes. So yeah, lots to go, lots to be thankful for, lots to be excited about, but an awful lot to work on as well.
Chris, your critique on year one of Mike McDaniel?
Well, I think, you know, it's in some ways unfair to even compare him to Brian Flores. You know, when we talk about, you know, he just had the same record as the guy the year before, which is true. But keep in mind, Brian Flores, when he was a first year head coach, he had the ultimate practice year, practice run, right? It was a tank year. Like, there was no expectations in that year. They could screw around and lose as many games as we want, and the fan base were like, you know, yeah, bring it on.
Sued over it.
Yeah, and just bring it on. Bring on the losses, you know. And even the owner is like, you know, joking around, supposedly, allegedly, joking around that.
Yeah, to say allegedly, that, it's a legal matter now, Chris.
Yeah, joking around that he'll pay him off to lose some games, you know. And so you had a guy that really had a chance to get his feet wet as a new head coach, you know, with no expectations. Here, Mike McDaniel took over a very different team. You know, he took over a team that we are having expectations. And then his, you know, built on his own success, the expectations even ratcheted up even further when they traded for Bradley Chubb. And now it's like, hey, we're going for the Super Bowl this year. And I think that that's in some ways, you know, how could the first year head coach not disappoint in that situation? It's really an unfair situation. And so I think that coming into the year, he was supposed to really revamp the offense conceptually into a grown up, fully mature NFL offense. He did that. You know, he did that. He was supposed to, quote unquote, fix Tua. He did that. You know, he did that. So,
yeah, I know it's only 12 games, but 27 points a game. I'm with that.
Yeah. I mean, he did that. And I think that so he actually accomplished the more realistic goals that probably should have been set up for him. No, he didn't accomplish goals that were probably not realistic. And so, you know, that's on him. And yeah, he will, as Simon says, work on the things he failed at in the off season and go into the lab and look at offensively the things that were working and not working, and the tendencies that they showed and that defenses took advantage of. And, you know, he's going to come up with new answers next year. So we'll see, but yeah. And I think that he did probably, who would you say amongst Dolphins coaches, had a better first year, you know, if we're really going back, you know, a first year as a Dolphins coach? I don't think even Jimmy Johnson had a better first year.
No, he did not. Dave Wannstedt had a monster first year, won the division and won the playoff game.
That's true. Dave Wannstedt had a good first year. You're right. He won a playoff game. That's the last time we won one. He did take over a team that was built, just as Mike McDaniel. You know, you could argue that he took over a team that was built.
To be fair, he had a first year quarterback in Jay Fiedler. So,
right.
It was a little bit different. You know, it was Marino's retirement year.
He didn't have Dan Marino, and he had that. So I think, yeah, you have to go back more than 20 years, obviously, to say that we had we had this kind of success. I mean, even I guess you could say Tony Sperano, because they came up with the Wildcat. But the Wildcat wasn't sustainable, you know.
No.
And so, you know, you look at that too. But I think that this was a really one of the strongest first years that we've had in Dolphins coach history, and so a lot of reasons to look forward and be optimistic.
On the offensive side of the ball, you know, I think that the identity of this team, you know, the quarterback and the two wide receivers, Waddle and Hill, I think that's the identity going forward. You got to be happy with what they've done as far as the offense this year, right, Simon? Like, this is what it is going forward, and we're pretty happy with it.
Sure. I think they've got to diversify, like I said before, you know, because it did feel like it became predictable, and teams began to work it out, as they always do. So, you know, the question for McDaniel is to get back in the lab and try and work out how he diversifies. Is that the run game? You know, do they hope that, you know, somebody like Jahmyr Gibbs falls to them in the second round? Do they take a back like that? Do they try and bring in a back in free agency like a Miles Sanders or somebody that, you know, really helps that run game so that they can really fix that element of it, so they're not so ultra reliant on the pass? You know, so they're bringing guys up into the box to try and stop the run. You know, we talk about how year two is the year where they really progress that wide zone running game. I don't think they can be so ultra reliant. I also don't think that they can continue to target Tyreek Hill as much as they do, because it does become predictable. I think they need to find a tight end that they can really trust in the system, because it was patently obvious that McDaniel didn't trust Mike Gesicki. And, you know, you want to hope that somebody, and I hope it's Trent Sherfield, because I thought he played really well. But, you know, you're looking for somebody who's just going to take the burden off those two guys. And you look at Cincinnati, for example, and look at, you know, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, but, you know, you've got Tyler Boyd there as well. You know, so having that extra guy, and whether that's Sherfield or somebody else that comes through, I think will really help this. But you really want McDaniel to get back in the lab and start looking at exactly how they're going to try and make things a little bit different next season, a little bit more unpredictable, while still making sure that Waddle and Hill get their touches.
Chris, you happy with the identity going forward, or it doesn't need a change?
No, I'm not perfectly happy with the identity, because I think that they came in as, you know, guys with great reputations as run coordinators and run game sponsors, and that, you know, though we'd had good yards per carry and efficiency in the run game, we did not have a run game that really dominated opponents or dominated games, and we gave up on it very easily. And I think overall, the reason I'm not necessarily putting that on the coaching staff, I'm going to put that on personnel, because, you know, one, until we traded for Jeff Wilson, we didn't have a good second guy to go with Raheem Mostert. And then two, more importantly, is the offensive line. I think there was a lot of smoke and mirrors covering up issues on the offensive line, continued issues on the offensive line that we've been complaining about for years and years and years. And actually, in some ways, you got to congratulate the coaching staff for having been able to cover up the ineptitude of guys like Liam Eichenberg and Robert Jones, and having to throw Lester Cotton into a starting position in a playoff game all of a sudden, and having Austin Jackson and Brandon Shell be your right tackles, having, you know, Greg Little in there, Teron Armstead missing games. I mean, it was really on the personnel. It was not a complete disaster, but it was almost a complete disaster, because Teron Armstead was told by doctors to get season ending surgery in week one, you know? And so, I mean, there was almost a complete and utter personnel disaster in the offensive line. And they kind of were able to get by with smoke and mirrors and grit and rub some dirt on it, and you know, and I think that that's to their credit. But that affected the identity of the offense, and I think going into next year, if you don't completely, you know, retool that offensive line and get confident in it to where you can actually have a run game, then I don't know what you're even doing, you know, and that's, so yeah, I don't like the identity necessarily that we're going with so far. I think that it still does need change, but it starts at the personnel level. And if we're going to get to be dangerous in a championship sense, then that's what they have to do.
All right. And we were going to talk about the defensive identity, but that doesn't matter anymore. They fired the defensive coordinator, and we don't know what it's going to be going forward. Although we suspect it'll be the front four: Sealer, Wilkins, Chubb, Phillips. So there's no need for that. So let's hand out some awards, and I'll go first. Offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, and team MVP. The offensive player of the year is going to be Tua Tagovailoa for me. You lead the league in passer rating. You lead it in yards per attempt, and you basically have to completely melt down to get down to a 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio. You know, that's a pretty good season. That's a pretty successful season for a quarterback. I just wish he played more games. And if he plays more games, I'm pretty sure they win more games. So he's my offensive player of the year. My defensive player of the year is Christian Wilkins. You can't set records for tackles for a defensive end. I mean, for a defensive lineman, period. And have, I believe it's 98 tackles. And I heard the stat, 76 of them were within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage or behind it. Top five in tackles for loss. Top three, I believe. Or no, number one in run-stop ratio. Yeah, he's my defensive player of the year. And my MVP is Tyreek Hill, and it's obvious. Transformation on the offense was stark. You went from a bottom third offense to a top third offense at least. And with the quarterback, you're a top five offense. And 1,700 yards is 1,700 yards. There's no way to sugarcoat that. It's the best wide receiver season in Dolphin history. And I understand that Mark Clinton had 18 touchdowns, but Tyreek had almost 500 more yards. So those are my picks. Your picks, Simon.
Tyreek Hill, Christian Wilkins, and Tyreek Hill.
All right, Chris.
Offense. Well, it's Tyreek Hill and Tyreek Hill as far as offensive player of the year and MVP. And it's not just because of the stats. It's because he catalyzed, I think, the entire offense even before they stepped on the field the first time. And I think that it was in attitude, it was in confidence, it was, you know, it was reflected in a lot of ways. He was infectious. He was tough as nails throughout the season. I mean, I was about to, you know, maybe consider a Teron Armstead just for the toughness that he'd put on display all year, fighting through all those injuries, playing anyway, playing really good football too. You know, I think, but if I really think about it, Tyreek Hill faced some injuries as well, and he toughed himself through it too, and performed, you know, and performed week in and week out. And I think that's MVP caliber. That's offensive player of the year. They shouldn't have gotten away with being the type of team that they were this year. I think based on the offensive line talent, and he was the big reason that they did. Now, as far as defensive concern, our defense, you know, I see giving it to Christian Wilkins, but I'm actually going to give it to Jalen Phillips. And I think that's because, you know, if you really look at what he did this year from a pressure standpoint, he was the best. I think, you know, he might have been up there with like Cameron Wake as far as the kind of pressure that he provided, but he was a more complete player, I think. And the way that he took over in some games down the stretch, and the way that he developed, I mean, he might be the highest rated player on the defense overall. You know, I think that he's a strong he's a strong force on that defense, and we're going to have to pay him a lot of money. And you know, I think that he had such an impact on some of the games where the defense actually kind of turned it around a little bit, which weren't very many, unfortunately, because of the back end. But yeah, I think that's defensive player of the year for me.
All right. And that'll do it. The next time we talk to you guys, we'll be in complete off-season mode. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.